It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
There are so many stories about how food is making it to the table, and fortunately, more and more food is making it to tables that are looking forward to it, that need to be fed, that need to be sure that they're able to feed their families. And there's some really creative approaches, and I'm really happy today to feature to another creative approach, one that's very interesting, has a lot of promise, it's in the middle of change and making a difference to many lives in the Sacramento area. And my guest today is Rabbi David Azen. David, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thanks so much, Roger. Great to be here.
You know, you have a very interesting story. You're a rabbi. You are involved with a nonprofit now that has been called Fresher Sacramento. And as I understand it, it's evolving into more iterations. But why don't you start with what has been this Fresher Sacramento? And then we'll talk about where it's heading and what difference it might make to the public you're trying to serve.
Sure. Well, the most important thing for anybody to understand about me is that in Genesis, Abraham is told to be a blessing to all the families of the earth. And so for me, all of those religions that trace themselves back to Abraham, unless they are focused on that, they're missing the point. So I think all the rest is commentary, and I've been trying to actually figure out how to actually make that happen. And I think I have a simple way to do that. And so actually the first thing is that I have created a company that we all own together. So it is ultimately a global collective for the food system and asserting ownership, that we all have a stake in the future, that we all have a stake in the economy, that we all have a stake in our food system. And so that's what I've arrived at. And now going back 13 years, I started an organization called Fresh Producers as a nonprofit originally. I was doing something else, actually greeting cards, believe it or not, that had medical photography and amazing biological information. And I was wondering where I would give charity to. And I thought, well, I've got healthy brain neuron images, healthy muscle tissue. How about healthy eating? And then, of course, I had to start thinking about, well, how would I actually get kids to eat better? And telling them to eat better obviously isn't going to get very far. And educating them on cooking and all that would go a ways. But I thought if they were sales reps for fresh produce, they would be more likely to have to know their product. They would learn entrepreneurial skills. And they would also be building scholarship money for themselves. And that's where the idea of Fresh Producers came out of. And it was also a play on produce, obviously, but also I went to film school and I've produced theater and video. So it was a combination of the better eating, the entrepreneurship, and equity building all in one.
And you're a rabbi as well.
I am.
And so is this another path of your own spiritual journey?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The idea of being a rabbi, it can encompass a lot of different things. And in fact, that's part of why I went into becoming a rabbi as opposed to an attorney, I went to college thinking I'd be a civil rights attorney like Clarence Darrow. And that's a whole other thread to my rabbinate, but social justice was really what led me into becoming a rabbi in the first place. And so I had been looking actually for what my path in that way was, and I have found it. So it's very exciting.
So I kind of imagine that sort of a journey that for many people it's sitting and thinking, it's meditating or praying about what's the right way forward.
Yes.
When did the light go off for you that said, okay, I think this is the path I want to work on?
I think it was when I came up with a 4-point plan actually for how to engage youth in this, and I talked to the folks who were rebranding the 5-A-Day campaign at that point. And they said, I haven't seen anything like this. And so I said, all right, I don't really want to call 800 hospital gift shops to get another card into their racks. I really want kids to be healthier and communities to be empowered economically. And in fact, actually, one of the things I say is that 40 years ago, I was a champion junior golfer, and I gave that up to pursue this path. And my senior sermon in rabbinical school was a week after Reagan was going to be reelected, and my thesis was, if you're going to advocate for free markets, then we have a social responsibility to make sure everyone has access to them. And when I realized that food was the path toward truly free markets for communities, and that it was the that somewhere through food spending we could get to economic empowerment, that's when the light really shone brightly.
You know, one of the things when we start talking about this, I see you people starting somewhere. I mean, starting in Sacramento, mm-hmm. and in this region. I think where a lot of people get hung up is how do you approach some of these things at the federal level, where they have to pass the Senate and pass the House and get signed by the president and, you know, have money put in the budget. And what I keep getting inspired by is that I see this alternative approach is taking place. I've never heard of anything quite like your program, but I see other interesting programs all over the country. If somebody is coming up with an idea, and I think this might help our community, this might be a way that we can maybe help farmers, help the people that are hungry, help kids have a better way of looking at it, and they're putting it all together in a community. So how did you, once you had this idea and you had the 4 points, I mean, what's the next thing on your to-do list? I mean, do you call somebody and say, can you help me out? Or do you approach schools or the city government? What do you do first?
I spent over a year pounding the pavement, just following up on whoever I thought should know or would be interested or could be helpful in this. And finally, actually got a Kaiser grant just at the point where I was about ready to say, this isn't going to work. And Kaiser actually has been very good to me, as they say, right?
Yeah.
Over the years, they've actually come up with grants just at those moments that I needed them. And I've really gotten support from a lot of different folks. And in fact, the California Endowment originally gave us a grant to do a service learning project on nutrition at Health Professions High School. We then were at the Business Academy at Hiram Johnson. And I've been kind of wending my way. And then about 3 years ago, I realized that prepared food, ready-to-heat food rather than produce, or not along with produce, not rather than, was something that was really important, because a lot of people just don't have the time, skills, or resources even to get to the markets. Even if a farmer's market was around the corner, they might not know or have the time mm-hmm. to really prepare it. And so I got authorization from the USDA to actually make and distribute ready-made meals out in neighborhoods. And so after all these years, and after 3.5 years of working with the city, we just reopened a kitchen in deep South Sacramento in Meadowview area at a community center called the Pinnell Center for Sam and Bonnie Pinnell, who are both council members, city council members, who are incredible leaders in the community. And now Larry Carr is the council member there, and I've been working with him and Matthew Bryant, his chief of staff, and his office for over 3.5 years. And we just reopened that kitchen, and we're starting to make meals there. And now I've reached out to the principals at the K-8 schools that have 89% free and reduced lunch eligible households. So it's a certified USDA food desert. And so this is hopefully the proving ground for what we're trying to do next, which is to have people aggregate their food spending, combine their food spending, and be able to create a community meal plan. And so that's the next step, is to see if we can actually incept that idea.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Kaiser, because I've seen so many interesting things around the country that they have stepped in mm-hmm. and decided that if we're going to have people be healthier, if they have better diets, that's the best thing to be preventive, is that they have a good diet and they exercise.
Yep.
And as we all know, it's especially hard to do if you're having to hold down two jobs and minimum wage, and it's awfully tempting to get all your meals going through the drive-thru lane where they're offering, three sandwiches for $2 or something like that.
Exactly. It's very, very difficult. So we're going to see what we can do. But a lot of the other health systems are also interested. I've been having very interesting conversations with a number of them because they're all concerned about, A, what happens to their patients after they get home, B, how do you create healthier communities that prevent disease in the first place. So there's all sorts of interesting things. Kaiser also has done something interesting. They are supporting inner city capital connections and the initiative for a competitive inner city to because they recognize that small businesses are part of a healthy community. Mm-hmm. And so we were selected as one of their small businesses actually last year. And I had an opportunity to be in Boston for a conference. And then about a week before the conference, they said, we'd love to have you present. And so I had an opportunity to share the vision, and people are starting to understand it and see it. And what I would love to do is be able to connect all of the dots of all of the things that you're talking about, all of those different initiatives, because everybody's doing lots of different interesting things. One of the things we're missing is how do we really combine all of our efforts?
Let's cut to the bottom line. I don't know if it's a bottom line. At least let's cut to where the program is being delivered so that people can get a picture of what it is. Mm-hmm. And then we'll go back and backfill a little bit about sure. the future and how you're bringing all the people into the community. But what's the product? What is it that is being produced and that gets into someone's hands and gets into their onto their table?
Right. So it is a regular healthy sized portion of food. One meal is somewhere between 14 to 16 ounces. It's usually a lean protein, like we use a lot of turkey, vegetable, and a complex carb. So it could be a Southwestern chicken salad. It could be a vegetarian lasagna. We've done soups. We've done pasta dishes, but with enriched pasta. We've got things like one of the things that I joke about is we've got dishes that are not kosher. This is not a faith-based organization. It's not kosher per se. So we've got a pork tenderloin, mashed sweet mm-hmm. potatoes, and asparagus, right? And our price point is really $5. Mm-hmm. And so when I ask people, what would you think you would normally pay? It's $7 to $8 for the meals. And so we're actually looking for a mix of folks who can help subsidize and keep the prices lower for folks. And I think that that $5 price is even too high for everyday food, mm-hmm. right? So we could hopefully replace the trips to the drive-through, and we can give better food than a lot of other options. And if we can then really get the volume going and have a lot of partners, and in fact, one of the things I'm looking to do now is bring other nonprofits that produce meals, such as, I shouldn't name them sure. At this point, but I'm reaching out and working to build a coalition around this concept that if we can have a way for people to order through the month, one of the big issues is that people on food assistance often don't make it through the month. The budget doesn't last. So they're running out of food, and then the food bank is there, but that's only a very stopgap emergency measure. So how do we create a consistent, sustainable business model for ending hunger? And that's what we now talk about, is that we're in the business of ending hunger.
So the meals, are they frozen, fresh, cryovac, vacuum pack, chilled? What's the state that they're in?
Right. So the rules around SNAP, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which used to be called food stamps,
sure.
are that only in there's only actually certain counties that have a restaurant option for the elderly, disabled, and homeless.
Right.
Otherwise, the meals have to be cold. They have to be chilled. So we prepare the meal, we package it, we cool and then package. We don't have a large kitchen, and we don't have all of the – I would love to be able to vacuum seal stuff so that right. it lasts longer, but we're not at that point yet. So it's all fresh, and you should consume it within 2 to 3 days. A lot of them could be frozen if you don't get to it, but we're not in the frozen. We want people to have fresh food.
Are they in a microwavable
yes,
platter?
Yes, exactly.
And then what, like a plastic over the top? They just remove the plastic and stick it in the microwave?
It's actually one of those – like. It's a microwavable container with a top on it that you just take off. It's not plastic yeah. sealed.
Yeah, I always wonder about that, whether or not you're supposed to leave the top on or not.
If you take it off and you leave it lightly on, and then microwave for two or 3 minutes.
Still think the plastic melts into it or something.
Yeah, right. Kind of
work. So I cover it with a paper plate. But now, if those plates, somebody, they can use their SNAP credits with an EBT card, and
yes.
So just as they were able to take what people used to say were food stamps, SNAP, the
Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program.
Right, okay, SNAP.
Is known as CalFresh in California.
Which a large percentage, or fairly large percentage of people qualify for SNAP. I don't know how many Californians there are, but it's a surprisingly high number.
It's actually probably... the estimates now for food insecurity, where people don't always know where their next meal is coming from, I would say are upwards to 25% to 35% of Californians. Even a lot of folks who have jobs are, with rents rising and other costs, health insurance, all of those things, they're really struggling. And so the food banks are actually seeing a fair number of working poor now.
So these EBT, the cards, electronic benefit transfer SNAP and cards that people have, which could be 20 to 30% of the population, and I would imagine in some of the targeted communities, it's even higher than that number.
Well, you look at the 89% of at these schools where we're at, then absolutely, it's much higher.
So they get these, and they have a choice. They can go to the farmers markets now, mm-hmm. and they can use it at farmers markets. They can use it in stores and some products are precluded from mm-hmm. being used for it, or they can get it through your program. And so there is a subsidy, if you will, that to help these kinds of programs along, and you're providing something that is local and nutritious. And it sounds to me like for $5, I can't imagine how you can make it go further in a store. I mean, people can,
right.
Especially if you look at like most of the hot salad bars and so forth that exist in many of our supermarkets, usually at $8.99 a pound or something like that.
All right.
And so every time I try to fill up one of those little cardboard boxes to go, it ends up being $9.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're getting a good value with their SNAP budget then. So how many meals are you able to come up with now weekly?
Right. So we're in the building phase right now. We're actually doing more events and other things. So we're working with Habitat on some volunteer things with the youth pop-ups that they're doing on Friday nights. So we're doing more of that, and then we're laying the groundwork. So our website doesn't quite yet have the ordering capacity. We should have that within the next month or so. Mm-hmm. And then we'll really start to make the meals. We think that in one shift out of the kitchen that we're in, hoping we can get to 1,000 meals a shift, mm-hmm. Which would be terrific. And then we could potentially add a second shift, so we could get up to somewhere to 10 to 15,000 meals a week out of the one kitchen. Mm-hmm. And again, once we max that out for that community, the idea would be that we have other partners in this program who are also able to make meals, and then people can really have different pickup points. Mm-hmm. Right now, we have the community center for a pickup point, and then we're hoping to be able to distribute a couple of other locations in the neighborhood and then build it out from there.
So let's back up then and say, okay, you're going to decide what's going to go into the meals. I mean, how do you get the food? Are you lined up with farmers, with food pantries? Where does the food come from that you're using?
So there's the aspirational goal. Let me talk about the aspirational goal, which is that we are, and we have started working a bit with local farmers. Right now, our volume is inconsistent, and so we're not at the place where we can order regularly from the farmers. We can, but we are looking to build out a program where we actually can incentivize urban ag and even youth, right, who could be growing in backyards and selling to the program through the through the new laws that allow that. And so, going back to a holistic approach, The idea is to have as much of the food system owned and operated by the community itself, including whatever growing capacity can happen, including local farmers. And started conversations actually with some institutions that are buying large amounts locally and whether we could somehow be part of their buying chain and then bring it over into our program.
What about some of the community gardens? Some of them are producing an incredible amount and you know, going into empty lots and so forth. In
absolutely. We'd love to help support that. I mean, a lot of the community gardens, a lot of the school gardens are more for educational purposes.
Sure.
than sure. they don't grow in quite enough. And a lot of them are, you know, individual families or households have a 10 by 10, you know, piece of the community garden and they're growing for themselves. But if they had excess capacity and would sell into our program, that would be phenomenal.
Well, you know, places like Richmond and Oakland and Detroit, mm-hmm. They're doing incredible amount of food.
Yes.
I know Vancouver is doing so too. That are and in those cases, they have people that are involved in growing the food too that are in need, that are
right.
unemployed or youth that they want to get more engaged in the growing end too.
Yes, and actually, we're working on the numbers to try to figure out how much sweat equity we can have in trade for food credits,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So that folks who don't even have SNAP, because there's actually about $2 billion of benefits that Californians are eligible for, but they're not enrolling. And there's all sorts of issues as to why they're not enrolling in the system. But we could have that. But there are plenty of folks who don't have those benefits, right? And so being able to include them in some way is very important.
So you got all this potential to be able to grow the food and have people involved in growing the food and get it to you, and then you have to decide, okay, well, I've got this to work with, what can we make?
Mm-hmm.
So who does that? Who's deciding and saying that, okay, this ends up being, we're going to have like 2,000 of, you know, turkey and potatoes and green
right.
beans or something?
So right now I've got two folks who are chefs and veterans in the food business working with me, and they're the ones who are figuring out what kind of menus. And one of the things that I'm very interested in is actually, as we expand, to have the community hold a competition for the neighborhood freshest chef, who would then know the tastes and the culinary instincts of the community, be able to work with youth and others on developing recipes, and then figure it out from there. So as much interaction and involvement and engagement for the community as possible.
So you've got the concept, you've got the food, you've got the plans, you've got a lot of other potential to grow, but somebody has to be chopping up the vegetables and putting them together. So where does that come from?
So again, we're going to be looking to the community and hiring as much from the community as possible for prep cooks and also for training. So one of the things that I think is really key is if we can actually train catering crews, right, from youth and others, intergenerational catering crews that could then set up places for people to get the food. And there are plenty of underutilized kitchens out there, right? So I think there's a tremendous opportunity to create jobs right in the community.
So where are you in the progress of this right now? You've got a really inspiring vision of this, and you've got a game plan, and it makes a lot of sense. So how would you describe the stage that you're in currently?
Underfunded and and overinspired.
Yeah, well,
how about that?
Yeah.
So right now we're working, you know, as people learn that we're available and we're getting more and more opportunities to do the events. And we've got actually some customers that we've had. We did a pilot in the fall with Black Child Legacy and pregnant moms and trying to reduce African American infant mortality. And so they've been saying, when are you going to be open again? And so I'm just waiting for that, you know, the website and all of those processes to be ready. And I think we'll see, you know, what kind of demand we can build in the community. And so we're bootstrapping right now. I'm definitely looking for funders and funding and anybody who would want to contribute. We are a tax deductible donation right now, and I would then consider that an investment in the community, right, to create this community-operated business idea. So that's where we're trying to head.
Well, I think we should identify right now then where if somebody is interested and they'd like to participate, like to help, or like find out about helping, how do they find you?
www.freshersacramento.com.
Okay.
Freshersacramento.com.
Now, that might be if they want to make a contribution. Mm-hmm. What about if people just want to help and saying, you know what, I don't have any money, but I would like to help.
Volunteer. We love volunteers. We're very, very happy. We actually had to make 500 burritos for one of those youth pop-ups, and we had 6 volunteers, and in 3 hours, chick-chock, it was done. So that's always helpful, and there are lots of other opportunities for folks to help with distribution, with packaging, with all sorts of different things, with marketing the program and letting people know about it.
Well, you approached this as a rabbi that had one journey that you were on, and your spiritual journey, and working with your folks and doing things, and then you looked at this journey. You have this going on right now too. Mm-hmm. What's inspired you? I mean, when you look at this journey again, that you've been at it now for a while. I mean, what's encouraging you and what's challenging you at this stage?
I will not let this go. Once I realized what the opportunity was, I'm not a great manager. I'm not a great organization builder. So what's happened is I kind of feel like I've been in a think tank. Mm-hmm. Like I could have done this through a think tank, although I think the on-the-ground experiences that I've had have been really informative. And what I've been really trying to do is put together a comprehensive model, not one that I can operationalize myself, but this is the moment where we are really looking for the backing to be able to get the right people, right? The COO, mm-hmm. who can really make this thing hum. You know, we'll do it on the ground at one level, but then replication and expansion is definitely part of where we want to be heading, and so that's what's going on. So it's very interesting. We're actually we've been nominated by Dr. Pan, the state senator, as his nonprofit, California Nonprofit of the Year. Each state senator gets right to do that. And it's interesting. Internally, we're like, are we really ready for this? And on one level, no, we're not. And on the other level, people are getting what I'm talking about, actually, for the first time in 13 years. They're not scratching their heads and saying, what are you talking about? They're really understanding it. And that means that I've arrived at the place where I can describe the vision well enough for people to get engaged and get on board with it. And so we're hoping that we can use that nomination as leverage for the promise and for the opportunity that is ahead.
Well, just a minute then, and we're going to wrap up on, but that opportunity that's ahead, if you were going to look down the road, 5 years from now we have this conversation,
yes,
and we were able to look back.
Yep.
Where do you hope you are? What's it going to look like 5 years from now if you had your druthers?
Absolutely. So with Dr. Pan, I actually said I believe that we can create a food secure city and then his district. And so our goal together now is that by the time he terms out of office in 2022, that his district is food secure. And so that would really be the model in 5 years, where we can figure out how to really, again, assert ownership, pool resources, plan meals, end hunger. That's it.
Well, that's it. That's a lot. That's a fantastic accomplishment. And I tell you, I really appreciate what you're doing. And I think that we're fortunate to have people like you that will step up. And I think there are other people like you.
There are a lot of people out there whose hearts and minds and hands are in the right place.
Well, and the thing I like, too, when we do a podcast like this, I end up having people that are listening all over the country and really all over the world listening to the podcast. And I think some of them will be inspired. Some of them will reach out to Rabbi David Azen. And David, they'll
want to
reach you and say, hey, look, we're trying to do this in Chattanooga or Peoria.
And I would love to know what people are doing that is at all similar. and how we can learn from each other and create best practices.
Can they find you again on the same website to be able to reach you?
Absolutely. Or you can just go rabbidavid@freshersacramento.com and you'll get to me.
rabbidavid@freshersacramento.com. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, and I really am impressed with what you're doing. Wish you the best, and thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Roger.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.